to the Pitched Industries podcast.
Hey guys, what's going on? And welcome back to another episode of the Pitched Industries podcast. My name is Nick White, and in this podcast, I have conversations with some of today's most successful creatives, and I ask them about how they have gotten to where they are today, things they have learnt from their journey so far, how they have dealt with struggles or roadblocks they may have faced in the past, as well as asking them for tips and advice that they would give aspiring creatives who are starting out today. But before we jump into this week's episode, I'd just like to tell you all that you now have under 24 hours to get your last photo submissions in for the 2019 Pitched Industries Photo Comp. Entries close on the 4th of April and the winners will be announced on the 18th of April, so keep an eye out for them. Thanks again to everyone who provided feedback for me at Pitched Industries on Instagram. It really does help me understand how I can make this podcast way more beneficial for you guys and hopefully something that you will be able to recommend to others. But anyway, enough of all of that. Today, I am extremely excited to be sharing a conversation I had with the incredibly talented photographer, Zoe Morley. Zoe predominantly shoots weddings and has established herself as one of Australia's leading wedding photographers. Her unique take on photographing someone's special day has resulted in her at times shooting more than 50 weddings per year. So if you've ever had concerns about starting a wedding photography business, or you wished you could ask an established wedding photographer how they do things, this is going to be the episode for you guys. On this episode, Zoe discusses how she was able to break into the wedding photography industry in the start, how she deals with the stresses of shooting on a wedding day, her workflow and editing process, outsourcing, advice for people wanting to start a business today, and so, so much more. Zoe also talks about a heap of tools that she uses to streamline her editing process and stay organized when she's shooting so many weddings per year. I am certain that you guys are going to get a whole heap out of today's episode with Zoe, so let's get straight into it. Zoe, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I'm so stoked to have you on the show and have so many questions that I'd like to ask you. But before we jump into them, I'd just like to start it off like we usually do and ask you a few short and sharp questions just to let the audience better get to know you. Are you all good with that?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Sweet. So where do you call home?
Well, currently I live in Sydney in Australia. I live on the Lower North Shore in a suburb called Narromburn, which is actually where I grew up, and my partner and I live in a 150-year-old converted church.
Whose work are you admiring the most currently?
I think in terms of just inspiration, I've always got that from other styles of photography. So my inspiration has always come from photojournalists and documentary photographers. Cool. My favorite being Sebastian Salgado. He's an amazing photographer. I went to the MCA. There was an exhibition of David Goldblatt's work. He's an amazing photojournalist. He photographed during the South African apartheid, and his work is just unbelievable. So, yeah, absolutely in awe of his work at the moment.
Awesome.
But in terms of wedding photographers, I really admire, I guess, my friend's work. So yeah. I think you just stay close to people that you admire. So I'm lucky that I have a lovely group of wedding photographers who are friends, and I really admire their work. And one of them being Dan O'Day. He's an amazing magician with wedding photographer.
Cool.
And he's actually shooting my wedding. So I'm super excited about that.
This is a new one now. So what is your favorite movie?
Oh, you got me out on that one. So, I'm just thinking about movies that have just made me laugh, and I have never laughed so hard as when I watched the English version of Death at a Funeral. Have you seen that? I was in stitches the whole time.
Wow, I haven't seen that. That's why I've sort of incorporated this question in, because I just want to start listening. I just want to start watching more movies, you know? So awesome. I'll check that one out for sure.
Good question then. It's really funny. Don't watch the American one. That's crap. But the original English version, it's amazing.
Okay.
I just laughed. Awesome. I had tears rolling down my face. So funny.
It's on the list. It's on the list. So what is your favorite quote?
That would definitely be from another photojournalist whose work I love, Elliot Owett. And I have it on my website, but his quote is, "To me, photography is an art of observation. I find it to be little to do with the things that you see and everything to do with the way that you see them."
Wow. Yeah, that's awesome. What is a book that you would recommend to our audience?
To be honest, I don't really read a lot of books these days. I tend to listen to a lot of podcasts and audiobooks.
Yep.
And I'm not sure if people would really share my enthusiasm for true crime. So I'm going to go back in time to when I loved reading Nelson Mandela's Long Walk to Freedom. Really inspiring book. Yeah.
Cool. So that might be the answer to your next question. If you could sit down and drink a beer and have a conversation with anyone in the entire world, past or present, who would that person be and what would you be drinking?
If you'd asked me this a couple of weeks ago, it definitely would have been Nelson Mandela. Like I've got his quotes all up my wall and his speech. But I think after the last 2 weeks with everything that's happened in Christchurch, I would really love to meet Jacinda Ardern, who's the Prime Minister of New Zealand.
Yeah.
I think she is just absolutely amazing. She's dealt with everything so well. And she really gives us hope that there is still, you know, inspirational leaders out there. I think in our current political climate, it's a bit disappointing with the leaders that we have, but she's just an absolute machine. Like she's had a baby while she's been serving as prime minister. Like she's just, so inspirational, especially for women who run their own businesses and stuff, just to see what she can achieve. It's really, it's great.
Yeah, she's been incredible.
What would I drink, though?
Yeah, what do you reckon she'd be drinking with you? That's the...
I feel like, I don't know. I feel like she's definitely a wine person. I feel like we'd have to have like a midday drink. So probably like a Pinot Gris or something.
Nice.
Hopefully it'll go down well.
Nice. Yeah, yeah. I'd love to have a Pinot Gris with her as well. I've been, looking at all that terrible stuff that's been happening and she just seems to be definitely leading the way with how to deal with a situation like that and...
So gracious and just understanding and contemporary and she's just an inspiration.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. So now that that's all out of the way, I suppose we should probably start from the beginning. Can you tell us all a little bit about yourself and where your photography journey started?
Yeah, sure. My journey to photography is sort of a long and windy road. I was born in South Africa, hence my obsession with Nelson Mandela and everything. But we immigrated to Australia when I was quite young, and my mum's an artist. So I grew up in an extremely creative household. She ran her sculpture school where we lived. So living in an old church, we had lots of classes in there of life drawing. So we didn't have a very conventional upbringing. We weren't allowed TV. We had to just, do our own sort of creative things to get entertainment.
Yeah.
So she sort of inspired me to really start this creative journey. And she gave me my first camera when I was 14.
What was that?
You know, quite a long time ago. Gosh, I think it was it was an old Minolta camera. I don't even know where that is anymore, but it was a film camera and we built a dark room in our backyard. So it was so much fun just taking photos and just developing them. And that's where my passion for photography really began. But into making it into a career, that didn't happen. It took a long process to get to. So after school, I traveled a lot. I spent a year traveling through Europe and Africa and spent a long time volunteering at an orphanage for children with HIV/AIDS in South Africa. And it was sort of during this period that I learned to love photography and how it could capture moments and tell stories. So whilst I was there, I sort of used those photos to capture everything. And I brought that all back with me and held a fundraising exhibition with the photographs,
awesome.
Which managed to raise $30,000. So that was a really nice turning point for me to see that, you know, photography could be a way of making a career, but also making a difference.
Yeah.
And from there, I went to uni and studied digital media, but sort of with a more focus on photography and never really knew what I wanted to do with it. I was always inspired by photojournalists and that style of photography, but I never really knew how to get my foot in the door for that.
Mm.
It's a very competitive area and, it was hard. So I sort of started with a range of different photography jobs. Being an adventure enthusiast, I started working as a photographer photographing international mountain bike races. So,
wow, cool.
Yeah, it was really fun. I got to ride off the back of motorbikes and it was all just a bit crazy. So that was really fun, but it wasn't really paying the bills.
Yeah.
And because I was so obsessed with travel at the time, I just decided to give up a little bit on photography. And then I randomly became a flight attendant and moved to Dubai and worked for Emirates for a couple of years.
That's a fair leap.
It was a massive leap. It was just like, oh, I'm done. I just want to go traveling. Always
so,
had
so
my
how
camera
old
with
were
me.
You
I was always,
then?
How old was I then? I must have been 22 or something. Okay. I finished uni, so yeah, I was about 22 because when I quit, I was 25. So I did it for a couple of years. You get over it pretty quickly. It sounds glamorous, but it's not. It's not as great as it is. It was really cool living in Dubai. And, you know, whenever I had a couple of days off, I would travel to the most remote places, like by myself. I'd go to Jordan and visit Petra or just do like crazy things. So I think you get a bit over the lifestyle, I guess.
Yeah.
And I just really wanted to get back into photography and making that my main focus. So I quit that in 2011. I came back to Australia and was living on the Gold Coast at the time. It was like November 2011.
Okay.
And I knew then that I wanted to do something with photography, like as a proper career, not something like flaky that would just come and go, like mountain bike photography or something. Yeah. And I knew I could take photos, but I guess I just didn't really want to spend time focusing, working for other photographers and sort of getting established that way. And I was like, well, people are getting married all the time. Why can't I just take photos of them?
Yeah, absolutely.
which sounds a lot easier than it actually is. So it was the end of 2011 and I was just chatting to my cousin. I was like, I don't know how I'm going to get booked for a wedding if I've never actually photographed a wedding before. Mm. And we were kind of brainstorming and she's like, do you have any friends that are getting married? And I was like, no. So I couldn't do anything like that. And we're like, why don't we just put on a big fake wedding? And I was yeah, that sounds fun. Yeah. So me and her, we put together this proper fake wedding. It was just basically a bit of fun. Like I had all my friends involved. My flatmate was the celebrant. She was really lucky because she had connections already within the industry. So her friend had just started up a wedding dress label called Grace Loves Lace, which is actually really big now, but at the time it was a label that had just started. So she was happy to lend us a wedding dress. And we got other vendors involved who are, you know, just establishing themselves and were happy to do work for free in exchange for photos.
Wow, that's a hell of a collaboration to organize straight off the bat.
Oh, yeah. Like, I honestly had no idea about weddings. But it wasn't like no one was getting married for real. Like, it was my cousin. She had already married the guy who was, like, technically getting married in the photo.
Yeah.
And I knew nothing about wedding photography. Like, I basically never even looked at wedding photos. I just knew my style was going to be photojournalistic.
Yeah.
So we just went with it and, yeah, made the most out of that day and just, yeah, had a bit of fun. And then I used that as a portfolio piece, straight away just pretended like it was a real wedding. And from that, I got 5 new bookings just from having it on my website and stuff. And, yeah, the first time I ever shot a wedding was the first time I'd ever been to a wedding.
That's crazy. Yeah. I can't believe that you did that. That's so cool. When you gathered your portfolio of images from there, how did you go about marketing it to actually land those first 5 clients?
So this is in 2011. So Instagram wasn't really a thing then, but Google AdWords was becoming pretty popular and it was much easier to work the system than it is now. And I just really learned how to how to use AdWords. I spent hours and hours and hours just like researching AdWords. I think now it's a little bit more tricky with keywords and SEO rankings and stuff, and a lot more people focus on Instagram. But at the time, I just used that to my advantage. Like I was happy to pay a bit of money for local advertising as well. Like I think when you're starting out, you really do need to invest money in advertising in certain areas, and that really got me going. Like I got all my bookings from AdWords, I think. And then from that, it was just referral based.
Yeah. So the referral based side of things, is that the old, often the groomsmen and bridesmaids are your next clients, or where do those clients come from?
Yeah. So that first year in 2012, I was obviously working other jobs and shooting those 5 weddings that I got before from my fake wedding. But I think because I'm a really client-based wedding photographer. Like I'm all about making the client have the best day possible. So from start to finish, it's all very like interact with them. I just put in my heart and soul basically into their wedding day. And even though I was definitely not the best wedding photographer, like I didn't know what was going on, but I really, they could tell, like I put in everything into those weddings. And the next year I already had 30 bookings just based off referrals from those 5 weddings.
Wow, that's crazy. So what were the biggest lessons that you learned from those initial first few weddings?
I learned a lot. like I'm still learning now, but I think those first 5, I was just, yeah, totally sort of out of my depth. I didn't really know exactly what happens at a wedding, and there was just so much to learn. But I think in terms of like coming away and knowing like what matters in a wedding, it's definitely what you can do to make the client happy at the end of the day. Like, doesn't matter what you do, you know, the weather can be completely crappy or like something happens, but as long as you're trying your best to get the best possible outcome for your clients, that's all that matters. And as long as they leave, you know, with a happy feeling, like they, you know, the last thing that the clients get from me is a beautiful gift box. And like in the gift box is like tangible photos and the USB. So they're left feeling like with positive vibes.
Yep.
And then they're obviously more likely to refer you. Like, so if they're left feeling like, you know, you're a great person, you're friendly, you're doing the best on the wedding day, you're obviously taking the photos as well, you're doing a good job with that, but they're left feeling like they were just, you know, really looked after, then that's really going to help your business, I think, to grow.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I definitely agree with you on that aspect for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
You spoke earlier about your style being quite journalistic. Is this something that you've tried to shape yourself through the first few years of wedding photography, or is it something that's sort of just come naturally?
It was definitely a gradual process. I don't know. I think you just, like, when you have a style, you just you have a style. Like, it's kind of like nothing I really thought about beforehand. Like, I've never been one to, you know, go over and over other wedding photographers' work and really try and copy any photographers or anything like that. I just knew that for me, the most important aspect is to capture the story of a wedding day and to tell that with, you know, as much of a candid and natural approach as I could. So, I think my style just really developed from the very first time I had to photograph a wedding and not know what was happening, and just capturing the moments as they happened in front of me naturally rather than doing anything that was contrived or forced or, yeah. So I think it started from the get-go, but I learned how to develop my skills as the years have gone on. And obviously it becomes easier and easier as you photograph more and more weddings.
Yeah.
You kind of create this, you know, the process, you know how the weddings work, and it makes it easy to get the right shots as you're going. And there's obviously, you know, I can say I'm a candid photojournalistic wedding photographer, but as a wedding photographer, like, there's just certain photos that you have to get. So whether it's, you know, you or me or some other photographer who does really traditional style of wedding photography, all of us have to, you know, tick off some boxes that maybe we don't really want to do.
Yeah, exactly.
But there's just a way of doing it a bit more creatively or adding your own artistic flair to those photos, like hanging a dress up, like anyone can do that, and hang it on a wall or a door, or, you know, getting that standard photo of a dress. But I think as I've gone along, it's really like pushing the boundaries and trying to like add a bit of a creative spin to that, like, can I put it, you know, on something else that's going to, you know, put a bit of light on that and make the detail stand out, or, you know, just kind of mixing it up a bit as you go.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So I suppose I'd like to sort of ask you now, can you talk to us a little bit about your creative process?
My creative process, I think that's a hard one because as wedding photographers, I think we do sort of have to follow a bit of a formula.
Yeah.
Which you kind of grow accustomed to. Yeah, as you photograph more weddings, it just becomes a natural process of the day. So, like, I know that when I go photograph the bride, like, I have to get the photo of her with her mom and the bridesmaids. And, like, there's certain things that you just, like, subconsciously ticking off in your head.
Yeah.
But as a creative process, like, I just make sure that I don't really – I just try and think outside of the box. Like, when I'm at a wedding – or if I haven't shot at a location before, I just make sure I go there and location scout and just try and find some sort of interesting area that we can take some photos, and just how can I make that a bit different to other photographers that have been there before. I don't really look at wedding blogs or other wedding photographers' work, because then I feel like you just fall into the same category and you'll just do the same photos that they've done. So it's harder to stand out as a wedding photographer when you've got to follow that the same formula, but you want to stand out. So yeah, it's hard. I definitely struggle with it sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the biggest things which worry a lot of wedding photographers who are starting out is the whole unknown aspect of the location which people might be getting married at, or how the whole day is going to run, essentially. How do you go about dealing with those pressures? And do you do much research yourself into locations, or do you just rock up and suss it out from there?
Wing it. I try to definitely do a location scout. So whether it's a day before, or I'll just arrive a lot earlier and just have a look around, just because it calms my own anxiety. Like, I feel like it's totally normal to be anxious if you've not shot at a venue before. And I've photographed over like 300 weddings, and I still like get butterflies in my stomach if I haven't photographed somewhere before.
Yeah.
And there's lots of things as wedding photographers that you have to know how to deal with, like wet weather. Like, what are you going to do? It's good to have a backup plan and know where to go. And just like consider the logistics. Like, if it's an inner city wedding, like, where are you going to park? How far is the walk? Like, you just have to know so many different aspects to kind of not only help with your stress, but also maintain the expectations of the bride and groom. Like, if they expect you to do like this whole bridal party shoot in like 10 minutes, but it's like a 10-minute drive away, like, how are you supposed to do that? And the sun's setting in 2 minutes. Like, it's just, you've really got to, you've got to do your research. You've got to know what time the sun sets and all that sort of stuff, so you're really prepared on the day. I think that helps.
Yeah, absolutely. So I kind of want to keep things sort of in the early days for you, because I think that's where a lot of our audience is right now. So what were some of the biggest worries you had photographing weddings by yourself in the early days, and how did you actively go about handling that?
I think my biggest concerns was definitely things like timings, because I didn't really know like how long a ceremony would be, like how long family photos, like I think at the beginning, not knowing all those sort of things really didn't help me, so that was a massive concern when I knew that like the sun was setting and that I didn't know where to take the bridal party, and I would just get really stressed and anxious about the little things. Like, if it's raining, like, what am I going to do if it's bad weather? Just stuff that really doesn't really matter, because on the day, like, you just work it out and it just happens.
Yeah.
So I used to get really caught up, I think, in the little things, but I think that's just something, with a bit of experience, or just, if you just ask other photographers who sort of know a bit more about how the day runs, it's definitely going to help you out, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose it goes back to what you're talking about earlier with like having that shot list and getting the shots which you know you need to get to kind of relieve a bit of that anxiety, because you feel like you're doing everything you need to, at least.
Yeah, exactly. Like, just going back to that shot list, like, I hate it when brides send me like a super long shot list, because I think that stresses me out even more. And I just deal better if I just know how to, because I know exactly what's happening on the wedding day. Like, I know what shots I need. So I don't need like a piece of paper shot list. And I think that sort of interferes with photographing the day naturally. But I can definitely appreciate, like, at the beginning when I first started, that just maybe that's when looking at other wedding photographers' blogs or like whole gallery would be really helpful. And you can kind of go through and just see the types of photos that are really important on the wedding day. And just like, even if you wrote that down on a piece of paper and just made sure that you tick them off, the bride doesn't know about that because she thinks that you know what's going on. But at least you know for yourself that you've got kind of those like key shots that are really important. Like, getting a photo with the bride and her mom is so important. And I've heard of a lot of photographers who've missed that like photo. And to me, I find that so surprising, because that's the photo that the bride is going to cherish the most. It doesn't matter like how you photograph it, but it is a important part of the day.
Absolutely.
Just stuff like that I think is important.
So I kind of want to go into a little more detail regarding certain parts of shooting a wedding, and I suppose one of the most intimidating parts of photographing a wedding is the bridal party location shoots and directing people through that whole process on the day. How do you go about that process? Are there any tips or tricks that you have for doing this?
I think I educate the bride and groom before the wedding day. So I'm pretty, I give a lot of detail about like how the day will go. These are the timings. Like this is how, so the flow, my style is really photojournalistic. I capture moments as they happen naturally. Mm. I don't like doing anything that's super posed or contrived. And so the bride and groom really know that my style is more of a natural style. And so that kind of leads into the location shoot with the bride and groom. I keep it really natural. I make sure that they have drinks and like just keep it fun. Like it's not supposed to be like a stressful process or we've got to watch the time. Like I'm even if underneath it all I'm like stressing because it's we've only got like 2 minutes. But they want to have a drink and they want to have fun. I'm just like, oh, let's just let them enjoy that for a couple of seconds or a couple of minutes and then we'll just go for it. And then they're not anxious themselves.
Yeah.
A lot of my direction sort of is a bit more it's pretty candid. Like I'll say, guys, just go for a walk over there, have a chat, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. If they're feeling a bit awkward and I'm not getting much out of them, I just use like a few little tricks and stuff that I've learned on the way just to make them laugh. Like they're pretty lame, but like some of them are like just get them to hold hands and like look at you and like tell them on the count of three, say a made up word and they'll say something really dumb and they'll laugh at each other. So, and that kind of just helps break down the barriers. Like I feel like the more you're able to make them feel comfortable, the better the photos are going to be. So yeah, just try and have fun with them. Like the more silly you are and like I make fun of myself all the time, I feel like it just really helps to make them feel really comfortable and you get way better photos when they're just enjoying themselves than if you're trying to like do something like staged and they're uncomfortable and they just want to go back and have a drink. Like, yeah, let them drink.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the first wedding that I shot, I really felt like I was directing too much looking back at it.
Yeah.
It made the whole situation a lot more stressful than what it needed to be. So I feel like people should just, like you said, just make it
enjoyable. Yeah, you just need to chill.
Yeah.
Yeah. If, the more you relax and the more you chill, they can feed off your vibes. Mm. And like if you're anxious and you're stressing and like you're being bossy and like directional, like they're not going to like it. Like why would they want to be around somebody like that on their wedding day?
Yeah.
They're just going to want to go home, like go back to the reception. So
yeah,
I think keeping an air of something that's just fun and carefree and you want to make it like a memorable experience, but you don't want it to make it about you either. Like it's about them.
Yeah. Have you ever had a bride and groom who really just didn't really like showing affection?
Yes, like I think that happens to all of us.
Yeah,
it's so hard. Like it's you know, you try your best, I think. And then with those sort of couples who just, you know, either don't want a bar of it or they just you know, not very good at being relaxed in front of the camera, and even though you've tried all your tricks, you just get them to walk and chat. Like just get them to just do natural processes, then they don't feel so focused on. So for those couples, I just get them to walk to a faraway spot and then I'll get heaps of distance shots so you can't really see their awkward expressions or whatever, and then just get them to walk back. And then by the time they've walked back, they kind of are a bit more relaxed anyway. So just try a few more tricks, and if it's not working, you know, you'll get some beautiful photos during the rest of the day. So you don't have to stress too much about portraits. Like it's only a small part of the day, and at the end of the day, those people know that they're awkward. Like they're obviously not standing there going, oh my God, I'm a model.
Yeah, exactly.
They're hating the experience because they know that they're not great with it.
Mm.
And so they're not going to love those photos. They're going to love the ones where they're candidly chatting to their friends and family, that they're on the dance floor. Like those sort of things are going to mean more to them anyway. So I think you just got to remember in your head that the wedding day is not about you and your portfolio. It's about the couple. I think a lot of photographers sort of forget that.
I suppose I want to kind of skip a few stages now and talk about how do you go about editing your photographs in post-production?
So I have a tendency to overshoot, I think, because I'm more of a fly on the wall and just like trying to capture every moment. So I shoot a lot. So I just want to say to people out there, don't get stressed if you're an overshooter like me. It's fine.
Yeah.
So on a standard wedding day, like I know other photographers will do like 1,000 photos, I will literally shoot around, oh, it depends on the hours, but if it's like a normal 9-hour day, I'll shoot at least 5,000 photos, like easily.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's a lot. Like when you're shooting like 50 weddings a year, you're going to need to like have a serious backup system for all those raw files.
Yeah, you need like hundreds of terabytes.
Yeah, yeah. So you can imagine my cupboards are pretty full with hard drives. But so my process for editing is after the wedding day, I'd upload the photos to Photo Mechanic because I shoot so much, I need a quick way to kind of cull them.
Yep.
And Photo Mechanic is the best tool for that. It really speeds up the process much better than using Lightroom.
Okay, cool. So what's Photo Mechanic?
It's in a separate program. I can't remember who runs it, but you just load up all your photos. You've obviously imported them.
Yep.
You've got them in a folder on your hard drive or whatever, and then you just bring them into Photo Mechanic, and as you're going through, and like everyone has a different culling process, but I sort of just tag the photos that I want to keep, and I'm pretty quick with it now.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if you're culling through 5,000 photos, you're going to want to try and do it as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
Culling is literally the bane of my existence. Like, I hate it so much.
yeah, it sucks.
But like, yeah, you just want to get through it. So Photo Mechanic is a definite must have. Like if you don't have anything else, just get Lightroom and Photo Mechanic for sure. Like,
okay.
When I first started using Photo Mechanic, it honestly saved me. Like it used to take me a day to cull.
Mm.
And now I can cull it in like 2 to 3 hours.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
That's cool. I haven't heard of Photo Mechanic before, so I'm excited to check that out.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because,
yeah, it's taking a lot of hours to do my stuff currently.
Oh, yeah, no, it'll save you so much time. You'll love me for it. It's so good.
Cool.
And in terms of actually editing, so once I've made my cull, I'll save them to a separate folder and then I import them to Lightroom.
Mm-hmm.
And I import them with my own preset that I've made myself. So I originally made my preset from Vesco. I think it was like Kodak Portra or something.
Yep.
180. I don't know, but it was like years ago.
Yeah.
And I've tweaked it so much like over the years. Like I feel like I changed my preset almost every wedding. I just changed some, I don't know, something about it. And then resave it, and the next wedding I'll import it as a new preset. So yeah, they get imported with my preset on, and yeah, I'll just go through Lightroom and start the editing process. I think as the kind of preset's already applied, like you can see how the photo will work and how it won't work. And I tend to edit all my black and whites at once. So as I'm editing, I just tag a photo that I want to make black and white, and then I'll come back in to all the tagged photos and I'll just do a big black and white sweep over them all. But yeah, the whole process usually takes about a day, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. That's pretty some effective editing you've got there. If it takes you a day to go through 5,000, cull them, edit them, that's awesome.
So, you get it down pat when you've done so many. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Have you ever thought about outsourcing editing at all?
Yeah, I do it actually. So if I get really stressed or if I have a lot of weddings going on at once in 1 month, so like next month I'm shooting like 7 weddings in April, and like they're all over the place. I think I've got 2 in Melbourne and 1 in Tasmania. So I'm going to be like traveling a lot. I'm definitely using Raw, who are a digital outsourcing lab, and they're great. So they have my preset, and I sort of like you import the whole wedding. Like, so I don't cull, which I feel sorry for them for, because sometimes they've got to cull 9,000 photos. I'm like, bye.
That's crazy.
It's so nice though. It's like comes back and it's all culled and edited, and I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, if I could afford to have every wedding outsourced, I totally would. But it does, you know, it's not super cheap.
How much does it cost?
It costs me, I think it's $150 for them to cull it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a bit more. I can't. They just changed their pricing, so I can't remember.
Yeah.
But I think in total, it's usually about $450 a wedding for culling and editing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Which is fine. Like, I'm totally happy to pay that. Or maybe it's about $400 a wedding. I can't remember. But I'm happy to pay that. But it's, you know, it does take a lot out of your overall income if you're doing that for everyone. So I'm happy to do it for a few, for sure, and then just do the rest myself.
Yeah, because I was thinking, I was like, she has to be outsourcing somewhere. If she's getting that many weddings per year, you'd just be spending your whole time, you know, behind the computer, just editing and doing all that stuff. So cool. Awesome. I'm looking forward to looking into all that for sure. So I kind of want to move on now and ask my favorite question out of the bunch. And that is, can you talk to us a little bit about the best piece of advice that you've ever received?
I think when you're starting out, it's really important to know, especially when you're putting together your portfolio, that you're only as good as your worst photo, which had kind of stuck with me for ages. I think somebody told it to me. And I was like, I guess it's so true. Like when a client's looking for your work and they're going to book you, like there's no point having like fluff in there. Like keep it to the best stuff that you can possibly manage. Yeah. And also, I think as creatives, like we always get caught up in self-doubt, but knowing that there's just always going to be somebody better than you, no matter what you do, is sort of important, because there's no point getting upset if the person that you're looking at on Instagram has like way better work than you, or you think that they do, they probably don't.
Then
just don't get too caught up in it, because it's always going to seem like the grass is greener, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's definitely something which we've spoken about a lot in this podcast in the past, is really that self-doubt which all creatives have in their work, and whether it be
and
how you deal with that really plays such a big part of it. So yeah, I think that's great advice. I actually hadn't thought of that myself with the "you're only as good as your worst shot." That's really, really cool. So what do you think has led to your success today with all your photography work and your business you've created now?
I think thinking outside of the box I definitely really try not to copy or do anything that other photographers are doing. I try and do my own thing a little bit and really making my business about my clients, like not worrying about what the other people in the industry are doing or what they're offering. I just really wanted to make it about the services that I offer. And I think leaving something positive for my clients is really important. So at the end of the day, my clients all receive a personalized box, like I told you, which isn't like everybody else is doing. Like I hand make my own candles and like put so much energy and love and thought into like creating something like really beautiful for my clients, which is different to what everybody else is doing. And it just makes me stand out a little bit more than I think just the normal sort of routine of just, you know, handing a USB and giving some prints. Like it's making a little bit different so that you're going to stand out.
Yeah,
I think that's being client focused is really important, I think. And that's what, I think so many of my referrals come from, is just people talking about me.
Yeah, absolutely. So how many points of contact would you usually have with your clients? So you'd obviously contact them a few times before the wedding happens, then obviously on the day. And what do you do after the day? How do you go about letting them know when everything's going to get to them and all the other stuff that's involved?
Yeah. I have a lot of automated emails. So I think as you get more developed and extend your business out further, it's like, what are the little key things and tricks that you can do to streamline everything, make it a bit easier? And I think automation is the one massive thing that's going to help your life out so much. Like I could talk about this for so long, just about the business management of like running a wedding photography business. But I send out a lot of emails, I think, just outlining what's going to happen on the day, and obviously meet with the client as well, like either if it's Skype or just in person. I prefer to meet in person just to really brief the couple about what's happening on the day and like my style of photography. But post-wedding, they receive an automated email like the next day that says, "Thanks so much for having me. I'll be sending you some photos in the next few days. Just to let you know, the usual turnaround is about, 4 to 6 weeks."
Yep.
And I'll send you all that information just so it cuts out, because sometimes they'll message you and be like, "So when am I getting my photos?" But at least like they know from the get-go that, it's going to take, a few weeks just to keep their expectations to a minimum. And then I send them a few sneak peek photos like within the first few days, which also keeps them happy. And then after they receive their photos, they get a slideshow a few weeks later, or maybe 2 weeks later. So they'll receive a full slideshow, like highlight reel, I use a program for that called Smart Slides.
Okay.
Which is so easy. You just export your photos and upload it to this platform and it makes it, yeah, really easy to create a slideshow.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, and all the music's like, what do you call it when you're allowed to use other people's music? I can't remember the word.
Royalty free? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. yeah, so you can use that music. They supply all the music as well, so that's cool. Yeah, so they get their slideshow, and then a couple of weeks after that is when I send the physical package of like the candle, and then in there is like a handwritten note. So it's, everything's really personalized.
Yeah.
So they feel like they're not just another wedding couple. Like they feel like I've actually put in the time and effort and love into their wedding day as I actually have.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely sounds like you are with your personalized candles. Yeah. That's so cool.
Yeah. So they receive that package, and in the package is actually the link to their online gallery. So every client receives their own personal online gallery, and I use PicTime for that. And they just, they can just download all the photos directly from the cloud.
Yeah, cool. So what provider do you use for your website? Are all these automated emails run through your website domain or your website host, or is it a other add-on which you have?
No, I use it's like a management software, so for small businesses, mm-hmm. and it's called ShootQ, and it's honestly the best thing that I've ever done with my life.
Like, okay.
If you want to try and manage like 50 weddings in a year, I don't do 50 weddings anymore, by the way. It's like way too hectic. Like if you're going to do that, you need to like, yeah, you definitely need ShootQ.
Yeah.
The software is amazing. Like you just, every time somebody sends you a lead through your website, it goes straight integrated into this software management program and it generates a lead immediately. So through that lead, I can go into the program and I can see, you know, when their wedding date is, and it will automatically tell me if I'm free or not free on that date, because, yeah, you'd hate to double book yourself. So that's a really initially a great way to process all your leads. And then I can send a email that, you know, saved email, sorry, I'm booked, but here are some other great photographers that I recommend. Or I can send them my pricing guide. And then from there, everything's pretty automated. Like once they book me, all the contracts are done through the same system, which gets sent automatically. Invoicing is sent automatically. And so I don't really have to follow up with all those kind of things, which makes it so much easier for managing different couples and everything.
Yeah, awesome. I'm so happy that you're name-dropping all of these services that you use, because I've been wondering how someone who gets as many weddings as you do actually does go about making it all work and still having a life, you know?
Yeah.
So that's awesome.
Yeah, it's really, I think it's having a studio management software is so important. There's another one in Australia actually who's just started up called Studio Ninja, and they're also really great. So that's another one to look at. Yeah.
For sure. And I'll have all of these links in the show notes to anyone that's listening now. So you can just go there and find all the links to everything we've been talking about. But there's something which I've been wanting to incorporate into this podcast a little bit more moving forward, and that is talking about particular negative headspaces or struggles or things which you as a creative have had to overcome to get to where you are today. Have you experienced anything like that in the past? And if so, how did you go about dealing with that?
Yeah, I think every single creative deals with those kind of thoughts all the time. Like, I think it's just a natural part of our job titles. Yeah, it's really tough. I'm not going to lie. Like having, you know, social media makes it even tougher when people comparing, you know, your work to other people's on the platform, and, oh, she's got 50,000 followers and he's got 4,000 followers. Like it makes it very easy to compare, and it doesn't mean that your business is better than somebody else's. So that makes it a bit of a struggle, especially if you're starting out. I can imagine that being really hard. Now with social media being such so prolific as it is.
Yeah.
I think with negative headspaces that it's important to focus your energy on something that makes you happy. So wedding photography can be really draining and a little unrewarding, and I think it's really important to be photographing in other areas as well, just to keep that spark and passion alive. Like, I think everyone that starts as a wedding photographer never wanted to be a wedding photographer. They probably wanted to be another style of photographer and then being a wedding photographer does mean you're financially more secure, or it's viable. Or I think a lot of photographers start off in sports, travel, adventure, that kind of thing, and then work their way into something like weddings. So I think keeping your passion alive for something that you obviously started off wanting to be a photographer for. For me, my documentary style of photography is something that I know I have to focus on to make me happier. And that, I think at the beginning of our chat, I spoke to you about when I first started out, I had a fundraising exhibition of photographs that I'd taken when I was at the AIDS orphanage. So a couple of years ago, I ran a Kickstarter campaign to go back and find all the same kids and re-photograph them as a bit of a passion project.
Yeah.
And that ended up getting about $11,000. So that really helped me to go back and start this other project. And so I re-photographed all the same kids again, like it was 10, 11 years on.
Yeah.
And I came back, and last year I had a big exhibition as part of the Head On Photo Festival. And yeah, that was like a really nice way for me to reconnect with what I originally was passionate about in terms of making a difference with photography and finding sort of that niche again that I really enjoy. And from there, we were able to raise another, you know, a lot of money for the orphanage. I think we raised another like 40,000 or 35,000.
Wow, awesome.
So yeah, it was nice to make, make a difference again. And I think just getting outside of your comfort zone a little and, yeah, focusing on something else maybe that's not just with the wedding industry will help with that negative headspace.
Yeah, you said earlier that you no longer shoot your 50 weddings per year sort of thing.
No.
So why is that? Are you really starting to try and direct your work more to these passion projects now that you've sort of killed it within the wedding industry, I suppose?
No, I think obviously as you become more experienced, you do learn that, you know, what your body can deal with and what it can't. And I think when I was doing 50 weddings a year, it was the year before last was when I did, I think I did 55 weddings. And I was doing like weekends of, it was crazy. I was doing weekends of triple headers where I'd fly interstate, and it was mental. Like I would fly, do a wedding in Sydney, fly to Byron, shoot in Byron, fly to Melbourne. Like by the end of that, I was like an emotional wreck, and I honestly reached burnout. And I think every wedding photographer has the point of burnout, and I think that's when you start realizing like it's not really worth it.
Yeah.
Like I think it's hard for us because we book so far in advance. Like I book weddings, like majority are over a year, so some are like 18 months or even 2 years away. And the dollar signs sound so great when you're like, oh yeah, like cool, I'm going to make like $15,000 that weekend. But then it comes to the weekend and you're like, oh my God, why did I do this?
Constant stress, just pulling your hair out. Crazy.
Yeah, it's not worth it. Like, I don't do that anymore. I've sort of increased my prices now that I can afford to do less weddings.
Yeah.
And yeah, sort of make the same amount of money, but just, yeah, do less, which is really important. And also just to have a social life. Like, we shoot weddings every weekend. Like, it's so hard. My partner works a 9-to-5, so it's really, really important to find that life balance, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the whole work-life balance for creatives is something which everyone struggles with for sure. But I'd like to move forward now and ask for any advice that you might have for aspiring creatives and wedding photographers who are starting out today.
I think when you start off, it's really important to develop a portfolio to have on Instagram or on your website. And I know, you know, from my own experience that it's really hard to get the content that you want to sort of showcase your work. And sometimes people get a bit despondent because they're like, oh, I don't photograph beautiful weddings, so I can't get beautiful content for my feed. But I think just going out and connecting to other vendors, like everybody wants content for their feed. So if you can supply them with content, they're going to give you, they're going to help you out. So yeah, just organizing a styled shoot is really a big one, kind of like what I did, but people sort of do that a lot more often these days. And I think, so once you have the beautiful content, stuff on your portfolio, like really work on developing your website, really focus on SEO. Like it's so important to have a good working website. Use Flow Themes. They're awesome for websites. So they can help you Yeah, they can help you. You can download themes and stuff, and they're really beautiful.
Awesome.
So yeah, working on a beautiful website is important. And then I would say investing your money into advertising. So it doesn't matter where you put your money in the advertising world, as long as you're trying to do it to increase traffic to your website. So like back in the day, I spent my money on AdWords and advertising on blogs such as Hello May and that kind of thing. Like, I know Hello May is hard to get into, so if you can't make it into Hello May, there's so many other wedding blogs and stuff that will have paid advertising services.
Yeah.
And they usually don't blog your work unless you have paid advertising in some form previously. So keep that in mind as well.
How much would you be paying for those advertisements?
I'm not sure. Like, it really varies. I think it's a big difference between online and print. I'd be sticking more to online stuff, and there's a huge variety. So you can be spending a lot of money, but you can also spend, you know, a reasonable amount. Like, go to Wedshed, go to Nuba, go to Hello May. There's so many good ones out there that would really be good to associate your name with and just see what they'll do for you. Yeah, and I think working on blogging, like getting your work featured, really helps as well, and building up reputation and relationships with other, you know, well-known blogs is really helpful, and treating them like, you know, people and being nice to them and like making a friendship with them is definitely going to help you out. So don't get angry if you haven't heard from a blog about your wedding. Like, they get so many weddings each day. Like, they're not doing it personally because they don't like your work. Like, they're honestly inundated.
Yeah.
And there's no point getting angry at them because it's never going to help you out. So if you want to get featured, just keep submitting, and eventually, yeah, it will pay out in the end.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's something which we've spoken about in the past. I think being persistent and not taking things personally if people aren't getting back to you or whatever is probably the best way to go about it, for sure. Look, I think we should probably be wrapping it up right about now. So I'm going to take this moment to let our audience know that you can find links to everything which me and Zoe have spoken about today, as well as some of Zoe's work and a heap of other stuff over at pitchedindustries.com. But Zoe, are there any places you'd like the audience to go to find out more about you and see more of your work?
I guess just my website that I'm actually just working on refreshing that at the moment. If you wanted to find out more about my personal project with the fundraising venture for the kids in Africa, you can see that at nonjabulo.com. So that's, I guess we'll give you the link in the podcast notes.
Yeah. Yep.
And then, yeah, just my Instagram account, which is just, yeah, Instagram Zoe Morley Photography.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Zoe, for taking the time to talk with me today and answer all these questions. It's been unreal. Thank you very much.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So that's it for today, guys. Thank you so much, like always, for listening, and I hope that you were able to take a few things away from our conversation today. Like always, if you haven't already, please subscribe to this podcast and head over to Pitched Industries on Instagram to keep in the loop with any articles that I'll be posting, as well as a heap of other stuff. Also, from now on, I will be posting people's work to the Pitched Industries Instagram stories. So if you'd like me to share some of your work, be sure to use the hashtag Pitched Industries. Anyway, guys, I hope you have an awesome week, and I'm looking forward to chatting with you next time. Cheers.